This is an RTRFM podcast. RTRFM is a community organisation and relies on volunteer and listener support. To learn more about what we do, visit rtrfm.com.au.
Is this like the continental role of radio shows?
Midnight Special. A late night chat show. With great questions and interesting segments. With the best guests ever. Broadcasting from Perth, Western Australia. On RTR FM 92.1. Midnight Special.
Hello, good evening. Welcome to the Midnight Special, RTFM's late night talk show, with your host Eileen tonight. Shouts out to Ross Chisholm for a rocking Burn the Airwaves. So each week there is a different host of the Midnight Special, and we cover different topics and delve into various conversations with special guests. It's my first Midnight Special show of 2019, and I'm back with another chef chat. I love getting to know the background of a chef, how they got into the industry, what drives them, and find out their approach to things. So tonight I'll be sharing a conversation I had with Melissa Palinkas, owner and chef of Young George in Fremantle. Melissa had a different career before becoming a chef and started out a bit later than, I guess, the usual. And she also cares about sustainability and working to reduce the environmental footprint of a restaurant. So I hope you stay with me tonight for a really interesting conversation. So about 2 weeks ago, I sat down with Melissa at her at the basement of a restaurant in Young George in Fremantle. So here's part one of my interview, and I start by asking Melissa, was food a big deal for her growing up?
In a sense, yeah, but in a sense, no. It was kind of always in my background. So growing up, it was always around me and it was always happening, but I wasn't aware of it until I got older.
Was your family sort of like a cooking family?
Yeah, my mum was like a really big cook, and my grandmother, who was German, used to bake, and I used to help her when I was really little. We used to do a lot of German pastries and stuff like that when I was a kid.
So what's your earliest food memory?
Probably my mum teaching me how to boil an egg.
Cool. That's a really important skill.
I think I
skill.
Probably was like only about 4 or 5, so yeah.
Awesome. Did you get it right the first time?
No, because I tried to make my mum and dad breakfast another time and they ate raw eggs.
Oh, okay.
Well, undercooked boiled eggs.
Yeah. So like kind of soft eggs?
Yeah,
soldiers.
Soft, yes, yeah, yeah. But like a little bit under that.
So like how did you get into cooking then?
I kind of fell into it really out of necessity. I left home when I was 16 and I went to art school. When I grew up, I wanted to be a musician, a rock musician. I was right into rock music.
Awesome.
And played guitar and stuff. And then I moved out of home and I went to art school when I finished school. And out of necessity, I needed a job. So I went and washed dishes. And I worked at the Brass Monkey, washing dishes for ages, and started from there, basically just started looking at food and thought, oh, I actually like food. So I watched all the chefs and I was thinking, yeah, this is something I'd like to get into.
So kind of what moment in time do you think, okay, I want to be a chef now?
Well, I kind of went into cooking and cooking in different, it was like the 90s, so,
yeah.
Well, late, early 90s, so a lot of cafes and stuff like that around town. And I enjoyed it, but in the background I still had music. So it was kind of, I was just cooking because I had to, but wasn't until I moved to London when I was 27 that I actually was like, this is serious. So I was 27 before I really went, this is serious, I want to do this. So pretty much for that whole time I was cooking, but I'm pretty much self-taught. So I never did an apprenticeship or anything like that. I just love cooking. And yeah, my passion spurred from about 27 when I went to London and I realised like the world just opened up.
Did you go to London for like a holiday or just to...
Yeah, it was just like working holiday. Yep. I was on a working holiday visa. And the funny thing was I went over to London and I started cooking in a few really cool places. No big like Michelin star place or anything like that, but I cooked in some nice places. And then moved to Ireland. Lived there for 3 years and then went back to London. And then I was pretty much around there for about 4 or 5 years. So yeah.
What would you say was the first proper kitchen job?
First proper kitchen job was when I was 18. The first time I ever like proper worked was at a place in Subiaco called Tummy Rumbles. It was a...
That's a great name.
A mum's cafe, and the lady who owned it, Di, she was hard, but she was a good boss. And I worked for her for a long time. And I was passionate then. I think of it now, I think I really enjoyed doing the food that I was doing, like just cafe food. And we were only making pies and sausage rolls and just basic stuff. But I was only 18, so those sort of things were like at the base of where I was starting to learn. So yeah, I still enjoyed it. But probably, proper would probably be when I got to London and I worked for a company called Six Continents, and it was serious and I had to do paperwork and I had to learn very quickly on my feet how to do a lot of things. So yeah.
What do you think is the most enjoyable thing about being in the kitchen? What's like the worst thing?
My favourite thing about being in the kitchen is the creativity, like when I see something and what I'm going to do with it and work, my mind just goes crazy. Like I just look at it and just go, wow. And I love working in team environments, so it's good with the chefs that I've got. I love walking in, I love seeing my team all set up, and I love getting all the produce in and just all looking at it and going, yeah, this is what we're going to do with it. So worst would be, I don't know, there's no real bad things about working in the kitchen for me. I guess probably the worst thing that could ever happen that I hate happening, and it's only happened probably twice in my life, is when so many people walk in your restaurant and so many dockets go in at once and you can't cope. Yeah, that's pretty stressful.
Just when it's just like kind of all coming at once.
It's just snowball. Yeah, it's only happened a couple of times where it's that bad, but yeah, where you just go, oh my God, this is way too much, yeah.
And you know, you're human, but the people who are dying
don't know what's happening. Yeah. And like you can't control, you know, if you've got bookings and then 50 people decide to descend on top of those bookings and then get all that traffic in the kitchen at once, yeah, it's pretty hard to keep up.
Do you love that kind of adrenaline when it is going crazy?
I don't know. I love it when it's busy. Cool. Being busy is amazing. Yeah. It's really good when it's busy, but when that happens, that's probably my worst disaster in the kitchen.
No, it's just like kind of too many levels up.
Yeah, too many levels up from being the busy point that you like to be at.
So, you know, like sometimes things go wrong in the kitchen. What's kind of like a really crazy kitchen disaster you've had? Have you had any?
I've got a funny one. It's not a disaster, but my nephew, we asked him to empty, he's a kitchen hand, and when he was 14 he started working for us, and we asked him to empty a drum of oil out the back, and he poured it into our sous vide.
Whoa.
Well, yeah, pretty crazy situation, but nothing more than that. I reckon that's probably
That's a good story. What's your favourite ingredient to work with?
Pork.
Oh, okay. So pork. I know that you are a champion of local produce.
Yep.
You've been a potato door,
which
is an ambassador for dough potatoes and a pork star. So you've got pork and potatoes there.
Yeah.
I was actually going to ask you, like, which one like better, but you've already told me.
Yeah.
So what would you say is a good way to cook potatoes and a good way to cook pork? How would you treat those ingredients?
potatoes mash. Whipped mashed potatoes the best, obviously.
And keep it simple. Triple butter.
Lots of butter. Yeah. Pass through a sieve. Whipped gravy.
Yes.
Perfect. Pork is so versatile. It's, yeah, it's my thing. We break down pigs like weekly. We do heaps of different variations on pigs. My favourite cut of pork would be, oh, I actually couldn't choose. Because they're all my favourites.
Yep. Has there been any like a recent pork dish you've done, created, that's been like, you kind of really dug?
I think one of the best things I've ever produced with pork in the charcuterie is probably the suppressor salami that we made. I was really impressed by it. We just tweaked the recipe, and then one batch just came out and we're like, right, that's the batch, that's the recipe, that's the one we have to follow. So yeah.
So you're known to be environmentally conscious, yes. And you use a lot of like kitchen scraps, and you host serious trash dinners.
Yep.
Everything at the dinner is made utilising scraps, leftovers, secondary produce, and stuff that normally might go in the bin. What is the most delicious kitchen scrap that people might not know about? That might throw away, but you're like, hey guys, just maybe give another chance.
Oh, wow, that's so hard. Well, it's not a hard one, it's just a large one.
Or maybe you can give a couple of examples.
Okay, all right. So one of my favourite things to do, and one of the most delicious things, is you can go and buy fish frames. And with the fish frames, we scrape down in between the rib cage, yep. And we get all the meat. Mm-hmm. And we do like a tartare with that on a spoon. And like we put a bit of chilli, chop a bit of chilli through it and season it up. And that's pretty tasty. Obviously, we use all our bones and stuff for stocks and bits and pieces like that. Vegetable trim,
yep.
Never throw away vegetable trim. Make really, really good umami out of like seconds, eggplants and stuff like that. Those eggplants and tomatoes, like seconds and stuff like that, they have got a really rich umami flavour when you break them down, especially when they're older and they're riper. And then just doing certain cooking techniques to draw out that flavour. Fish heads, amazing. Pig's heads, amazing.
Fried up.
Offal, yeah, braising it down, shredding it up, cool. Making terrines and stuff like that. Yeah, everything's usable.
Yeah.
We have, we've just signed up with Right Solution recently. It's an organic waste system. So they supply us with a bin and we just put all our organic waste in it.
Cool.
And what I realised when we did it, when we split it all up, is that we literally have one wheelie bin per week as a restaurant of food waste, and that's it.
Compared to 5 years ago or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
or whatever, yeah.
How many would you have back then? Like,
I don't know, you probably would have used a whole 1,000 litre kind of bin.
Wow.
You know, like most restaurants have 1,100 litre bins, one for cardboard, one for trash. I'd probably say that maybe 50% or more would have been food waste back in the day. Like people just weren't utilising everything. You know, when our veg comes through, like we use like the bulbs, the stalks, the leaves. We ferment a lot of vegetables just to draw out different flavours, and they'll go into sauces or complement other things or make it into a condiment. So just being resourceful with everything. And then you realise that, you know, if you're really good with waste, you can actually minimise it. But the waste that goes away goes to a company that makes Rich Grow fertiliser. So they don't take big stock bones or anything, but they break down like chicken bones and all that sort of thing. So it's good.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
So going on this environmental pathway, in 2017 you announced that Young George will have a kitchen free of disposable plastic.
Yep.
So I guess it's been more than a year later. Kind of want to know how that's gone. Like how's that, and what you've learned from it, the whole sort of process.
Well, it's good because my food stays fresher because I've got these special containers with these lids that basically suction on. So you get a lot more longevity out of your food. So you're throwing away less again.
Yep.
Yeah, less packaging. I've found that there's more organisation. My bins aren't full of overflowing of plastic. Yep. That was the main thing, was like I felt guilty about throwing away so many containers and just looking at it going, where's this stuff going, you know? And like you can't wash them because they become brittle. Once you put food in them, you put it back in the fridge, they crack, and then those particles go into your food. So I was just like, this is ridiculous. So I just made that one-off purchase. And I think we topped up last year and I spent another $1,000 on them.
Yeah.
But obviously from a financial point of view as well, like I'm not buying disposable plastic. Whereas that saved me money too in my business, which is good. We maybe go through one roll of cling film every 3 to 4 months, mm-hmm. and we use it minimally, only if we have to use it in the steaming oven or something like that that we need to cover things in cling
film. Find like a pastries.
Yeah,
like,
or so, yeah, but we don't. We do not cover anything in cling film. We hardly ever use cling film.
Okay.
But like, it's literally something that is just there for certain things that we do. What else? So now we don't get our veg in any plastic containers, so I've told all our suppliers we just get them in cardboard boxes, and everything just sits on top of each other, like all the tomatoes mingle with the peaches, and
yeah.
the chilies are just thrown in there as well, so, and things are wrapped in newspaper, and we have newspaper, and
we recycle
it. Yeah, so everything's layered in the packet. Some people forget, and we have to keep reminding them, yeah. like the fish guys, they won't bring any anything in, but I send their boxes back, even their cardboard boxes, I recycle them back to them.
Yep.
And if they anything comes in polystyrofoam, things that are left out the back is free for anyone to use and recycle. Okay. And sometimes they even get those boxes back with Young George written on the side of it, like from 2 months ago.
It's amazing how you've had to have that communication with your suppliers and get them to change how they sort of interact with you.
Yeah. The only thing that really annoys me, and which I can't stop using his Cryovac bags because of sous vide, but yeah, I'm planning to open another business this year, and I will not be using any disposable plastic, so I won't even be using sous vide method or anything like that, and trying to find a solution for when we need to use cling film, like exactly like you said, wrapping pastry or anything like that. So I've been looking at these stretchable silicone lids.
Yeah, and
I've seen them on the internet, but I heard that New Normal use them.
Oh, cool.
And they're like one of the best restaurants in Perth.
Yep.
They're very environmentally conscious, and they're all about sustainability. So I'm going to probably ask those guys. And when I saw Matt Stone at Gourmet Escape, he said, give me a call and I'll give you some hints. So
you're opening up a new place?
Yes. So I don't want to give too much away,
but
it's more, I'm developing my charcuterie, so down along those lines. So,
awesome.
Yeah.
What would you say is your essential kitchen tool?
Well, a knife, obviously. No.
That's good.
A knife, knives are good. I've got a big toolkit full of heaps of stuff, and I probably use all of it. One thing that I've started using quite a lot is kitchen shears.
Yeah,
a good lot of kitchen shears. I've been starting to use them a lot on different things instead of using my knives and stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, kitchen shears might be my one.
So I want to know, like, what advice would you give to someone who wants to be a chef?
I would say you would have to really, really, really love your job to become a chef. You've got to be really passionate to want to marry into the life of a chef.
You call it a marriage. That's what it's like.
It is like a marriage. It's like a commitment. And once you're in it, it's very hard to get out of, because it's just one of those jobs that you either love it or you don't love it. And there's no in between. There's no easy road for a chef. There's no dream jobs. Well, I don't think if you're a passionate chef, there's no dream job, because you have to work hard to work in really good restaurants, because if you want to work in with premium produce and make all your own things and do all that, that's, you know, you need to
realise
there's hours that are going to have to go in that, and the chef that owns the business knows that, or the person that owns the business knows that, you know, those hours need to go in. I wouldn't deter anyone for being a chef, but I would say make sure you do some research on what sort of area you want to go into, like with your you're going to be a pastry chef, or, you know, you want to be a line cook, or you're going to aspire to be a head chef, because there's different channels to kind of make your career path the way that you want it to go.
So, you know, you own your business, you've had a lot of different chefs come to your kitchen. Are there any, like, qualities or characteristics that you sort of see when someone comes in, you know, if they sort of tick these things, you're like, okay, they're going to survive?
Yep. You'll just see someone come through the door who it's focus, and it's something that someone possesses, where they are just yes chef, no chef, and it's kind of like, and very like focused on asking all the right questions. But I've had lots of people come through that aren't like backpackers and stuff, and you just see they just want to have a party and just come to work and earn the money. But there's a certain quality when you see a person that comes through the door, you can tell straight away that the way they articulate themselves when they speak, the way they carry themselves in their interview. Like passionate chefs, I'm available at all times. I don't have any stipulations.
Yep.
Yeah, and asking a lot of questions and like being, on point with everything.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah,
awesome. If you weren't cooking, what would you be doing?
I like the idea of having some sort of sustainable farm.
Oh yeah.
I like the idea of something around the agrarian kitchen kind of thing, but not having to do any of the work. So just owning it, but like directing it from afar, not cooking.
Delegation, having
other people doing everything for me. Yeah, but
sharing your knowledge, mentoring people.
And making sure people are, so having all these different programs.
That could
set
be
up.
A future, I think.
Yeah,
I
reckon that could be a future. With accommodation. I think myself and my partner, we like good quality accommodation with good quality food in the same place.
Yes.
It's an experience, yeah.
So I want to talk about music.
Mm.
I was really interested to find out earlier that you started out wanting to play music, wanting to be a musician. What kind of style of music were you sort of doing?
When I was growing up in the 80s, the music I used to listen to was Jimmy Barnes.
Classic.
Barnesy.
Yep.
A lot of INXS, a lot of Aussie rock bands. And then like Baby Animals, Noise Works, that kind of thing. And then if I was going to jump the other side of the world, it was like bands like Eurythmics. I listened to a bit of David Bowie, George Michael, Prince. They were kind of like my thing. And then in the early 90s, I was DJing while I was cooking.
Okay. So
that's another part of my life that I haven't spoken about.
What would you drop? What was your sort of set?
Real funky vibes.
Cool.
So I used to be a resident DJ at Connections Nightclub for about 3 to 4 years. And I used to do Friday from 9 to 12. And then Saturday night, I used to do 3 to 6 in the morning. And Sundays I used to have my own night, so I used to start at 10, finish at 2, but I used to have a guest DJ. And I used to DJ all over Perth, like a lot of nightclubs in Northbridge, obviously none of them are here anymore. Like we used to have...
Connections still here.
Well, Connections is still here, it's never going to go away.
I know, it's great.
I know, I played at their 40th birthday a few years ago.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, just as like, did like a little bit of a cameo, just did a couple of our set. But yeah, so when I came back from overseas, I played on the roof terrace up there.
Yeah.
I like, my vibe is... funk, disco, I guess I like all those old like Prince tracks like Controversy and 1999. I like a lot of vocal house, Jocelyn Brown, Barbara Tucker, Chic, those kind of disco grooves. I used to play a lot of disco vibes and like mashup disco vibes. So
when you talk about pursuing like being a DJ, was that your sort of career path?
No,
or,
I wanted,
or playing a band.
I wanted to be in a band when I was growing up.
What instrument did you play?
And I played guitar.
Cool.
And then I went to art school, still play guitar and stuff.
Yep.
And then I got into nightclubbing.
Okay.
And I went to Limbo's nightclub when I was 16 years old, and I pretty much just got straight into electronic music.
Oh yeah.
And I didn't look back, and I pretty much just loved electronic music, and I just started collecting vinyl.
Oh, cool.
From the age of 16, and then I got taught how to mix, and I would every week I'd make tapes and go into Connections to Tim Brown and try and give him one for years and years and years. I'd do it and he'd go, nah, sorry, it's not, every year. And then I stopped doing it and I was just like, nah, I'm giving up on this. And then my friend Amanda Millie, DJ Millie, came over from England. She was a DJ and I started like hanging out with her, and we just started playing and she started working there. So I started giving her my CDs and eventually got a leg in and worked my way up. And because I was like the early opening set DJ in the main room of Connections for many years. And then one day I got the phone call, you can do 12 to 3.
Wow.
And I was like, yes.
I get an audience. Oh, yeah.
And then, I've just progressed into doing other different sets and going around. There used to be heaps of gay nights. So they used to do one called Pink and trade, and that's where the, well, I think it's Air, is it called Air Nightclub?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, God, it's been three different nightclubs there, but so that was electronic music.
So do you still listen to music much nowadays?
Yeah, like, I do.
Big part of your life
still? Yeah, cool. I listen to music, quite a bit. I love The Killers, I love Queens of the Stone Age.
Oh, yeah.
I've got a bit of a diverse kind of like...
Got your rock and your electronic
and
all in between.
Yeah, and it all kind of like goes in,
So if you're in the kitchen and, you know, kitchen's pumping, what will you be playing?
Basement Jack's Red Alert has got to be that's my favourite song in the whole world. And it used to be one of the songs I used to play at Connie's all the time. And Groove Armada, that kind of era.
What song by Groove Armada? What songs by those guys?
Oh, don't put me on the spot. Super Stylin', Groove Armada.
You're tuned to Midnight Special on RFM 9.1. I just heard part of my interview with Melissa Palinkas from Young George, and two tracks that she loves to listen to while she's cooking in the kitchen: Red Alert by Basement Jacks and Groove Martyr's Super Stylin'. It is about 10 to midnight, and we're going to get into part two of my interview with Melissa, where I throw at her a bunch of Midnight Special questions, asking for her thoughts on important things like sandwiches, whack jobs, favourite movies, brand and romance.
Sandwich Tales! Discuss the best sandwich you had. What fillings you like. What bread you like. What about the sandwich was good? Discuss it.
I've recently discovered something, and I had it late night recently, and I've just gone, this is... probably one of the best sandwiches I've ever eaten. It's braised red cabbage with malt vinegar, pickles, and cheese.
Wow, it's like lots of pickly, cheesy.
It's pickly, cheesy, lots of cheese, and then in the toasty.
Sounds amazing.
On like the best.
Any
white
particular
bread.
Type of cheese works well with that?
I always eat light cheese, so I was using the light Jarlsberg.
Sounds amazing. I can do that at home.
Yeah.
I like how it's so
simple.
It
was just an accident.
Next question.
Whack job. What's the weirdest job you've ever been employed in and why?
Once I took a job as like a sales rep selling, I can't even remember what I was selling, but I got to the place, like it was commission based. No, you got a retainer, but you got a commission as well. So I got to the place and there was like five or six people and we all got in a van. And we got given a kit and we got driven out to a suburb and dropped off for like 4 hours at a shopping centre. And then we had to split up in teams of two and then go and knock on people's doors. And the first day I got there and we got dropped off, I thought, this is really strange. It was just really, really weird. And we went to split up and then the guy that I was with got sick, so I decided to go home. So the next day I went back and we got dropped off again and we're at the same shopping centre. And then everyone started talking like, it was just really strange. It was like a cult or something. And I thought they were like religious. I didn't realise it was a religious thing. I thought that I was being born into some sort of cult and they were like trying to draw me in.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was pretty strange. I can't explain it any other way, but I just, they were.
Were you
they were like,
a
I didn't realise
person or not at all?
No, not at all. I was really bad.
Yeah.
But I realised that it was some religious, everyone was religious.
Okay.
And I'm not a religious person.
No.
But then they were trying to draw me in. So I was just like, uh-oh, I'm out.
Yeah.
So luckily, where the suburb I got dropped off, my mum and dad only lived like I don't know, a couple of suburbs away. Yeah. So I legged it to their house and told them, and they said, just don't go back. And
no.
I was like, okay, I'll wait.
Repeat rental. Name a film that you've watched willingly more than 5 times.
Oh, what's your favourite film?
Grease. And Xanadu.
Oh, lovely.
They're my 2 favourite movies. They're just my childhood movies, yep. But I absolutely love them. And on my 40th birthday, which was a long time ago, 5 years ago, we were about to go to my 40th birthday party, which I had at Frisk, with 40 of my friends. And Grease came
on. Was that like deliberate, just 40 friends?
40 friends on my 40th birthday.
Did you have to cut people out?
No, it just ended up being like that.
Oh, that's nice.
It was just weird, it just ended up being 40 of my friends.
Yeah,
and,
cool.
So my cousin came and picked me up with her husband, and it just so happened that Grease started, and I was due to go to my party.
Wow.
But I had to stay home and watch it all.
Oh, well.
And
it was on TV.
It was on TV, so I stayed, and we all kind of like stood and watched the whole thing.
Oh.
It was bizarre.
You were late to your party, though.
I was late to my own party, okay. But anyway, I watched it. But yeah, they're my 2 favourite movies, and I've watched them over and over and over again.
Brand, if you were a brand, what would be your motto?
Oh, God.
What's your motto of life?
My motto of life, and I say it all the time, because I say it to my wife all the time, is if you can't change it, there's no point putting any emotion into something that you can't change if it's unchangeable. If something's happened and you can't change that, what's the point of getting upset about it?
Yeah.
So I do live by that a lot. It's something that she struggles with, but she always gets angry with me. She goes, like, why are you acting like this? Why don't you react like this? And I'm like, because what's the point of like having that energy, using that energy up over something that you can't change? So that would be my motto of life.
Awesome.
If it was a brand, that would be my motto.
Cheapskate romance. What do you think would be the most romantic thing you could do for someone for $5?
It was our 4th year anniversary. It was wood. Is that wood or measure? What's your 4th year anniversary present? I can't remember.
I don't know.
I bought Susan a wooden ruler, and I said something about not being able to measure love because it was unmeasurable.
Cool.
And
that's sweet.
Yeah, and that was $1.
Perfect. I love it. That's great.
So that's my interview with Melissa Palinkas, the chef and owner of Young George in Fremantle. I love the story about her love of Grease and how she was late for her 40th birthday because she had to watch it on TV. And I also really look forward to trying her sandwich combo one day. I think anything pickles and cheese in toast is a winner. So as I finished up my interview with Melissa, she handed me the menu of Young George and turned it over, and I found a list of her favourite tunes. Other classic dance and house tracks, as Melissa used to be a DJ around town, as well as some rock thrown in. So for the rest of Midnight Special, I'm going to play you Melissa's selections. I hope you're having a great night. And if you're tuning in, give me a call in the studio on 9260-9210 or email studio@rtm.com.au. Here's Prince with Controversy.
Thank you for listening to this RTRFM podcast. RTRFM is a community organisation and relies on volunteer and listener support. Visit rtrfm.com.au for more podcasts and other great content, as well as details on how you can support the station. You can also download our app and access RTRFM anytime and anywhere on your mobile device.